Welcome to the Deep Dive, your expedition into complex ideas. We try to cut through the noise and give you the insights that really elevate your understanding. Today, we're diving into something pretty fascinating, potentially paradigm-shifting, actually. It's based on a paper, The Long-Run Endogenous Money Interest ASD Model of the Debt Money System, Part 4. Quite a mouthful, but it makes some, well, incredibly bold claims about how our financial system is designed. Our goal here is to uncover these, you know, often hidden mechanisms that shape income, wealth, even inflation. This isn't just theory. It's about the very foundation of your financial world, how it really works. So let's unpack this straight away. What exactly do they mean by debt money here, and why is it supposedly so critical?
Yeah, that's exactly the place to start, because it really pushes back against the mainstream view. Most economics teaches exogenous money, money controlled, sort of injected from outside by central banks. But this model argues, no, wait, about 99% of the money we actually use, think M2 in the US, M3 in Japan, basically cash, checking, savings, that kind of thing, is endogenous.
Endogenous, meaning created inside the system.
Exactly. Created primarily by its central and commercial banks when they make loans, it's quite literally born as debt. Think about it simply. You take out a loan, maybe for a car. The bank doesn't physically pull cash from a vault full of deposits. Instead, they essentially create a new deposit in your account when they issue the loan.
Wow. Okay, so new money just appears.
In essence, yes, it's a bookkeeping entry. The loan is an asset for the bank. Your new deposit is a liability for the bank. And crucially, it's new money added to the overall stock.
So if money is mostly created as debt, that immediately changes how we have to think about the system.
Right.
It implies a totally different kind of plumbing.
Precisely. A different architecture. And this model gets really specific about that architecture, especially around interest rates. It doesn't see them as just floating market prices. Well, it identifies five key interest rates and argues they're interconnected through fixed spreads or factors. These aren't random. They define the structure. First, there's the base rate, the demand deposit rate. Let's call it factor one. Then the prime rate, what banks charge borrowers like businesses and households. The model uses a factor of, say, 3.5 times that base rate.
Okay, so significantly higher.
Right. Then the time deposit rate, what you earn on savings, maybe 1.5 times the base. Then the government bond rate, what banks and the central bank earn holding government debt, perhaps 2.5 times the base. And finally, the discount loan rate, what banks pay if they borrow from the central bank, often lower than the base, maybe 0.6 times.
So these fixed relationships, these spreads, they're not just observations. The model treats them as sort of rules of the game.
That's a good way to put it. They define the channels through which income flows, or perhaps more accurately, is extracted and distributed within this debt money system. It implies a certain design.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Because if these spreads are relatively fixed, it creates a very specific kind of flow, almost like a predetermined current. What's the biggest consequence of that?
That leads directly to maybe the most controversial finding. This system inherently creates a zero-sum game in income distribution, specifically through interest payments.
Zero-sum, meaning someone wins, someone loses.
Essentially, yes. Borrowers, that's producers, households, even the government, they pay interest. And critically, that payment comes out of their equity, their net worth.
Okay.
And the lenders, the banks, the central bank, they receive that interest, and that interest income boosts their equity, which eventually flows out as dividends, often to the bankers themselves. The paper uses visuals, like it's figure three, to show this sort of constant one-way flow of equities to bankers. It argues the system is basically designed from the get-go to benefit bankers at the expense of everyone else.
Wow, hang on. Designed to benefit bankers. That's a strong claim. So every time someone pays interest on a loan, it's not just a cost of borrowing, it's part of a larger systemic wealth transfer.
According to this model, yes, it's baked into the structure. The interest payment itself is the mechanism transferring equity from the non-banking sectors to the banking sector.
That really makes you pause. Think about the sheer scale of interest payments in the economy. Mortgages, business loans, government debt. If that's all flowing fundamentally one way.
Okay, so besides this wealth transfer, what else does this structure lead to?
Well, this constant flow on the way money is created also has another major, often hidden consequence, what the paper calls built-in inflation.
Built-in inflation. How does that work?
The model shows that the total income distributed to households actually gets inflated beyond the real income generated by producers, you know, GDP minus depreciation. It's like there's extra income appearing in the system.
Extra income. Where does it come from? It ties back to government borrowing. When government tax revenue doesn't cover spending plus the interest it owes on its existing debt, it has to borrow more.
Right, issuing more bonds.
Exactly. And when banks buy these bonds, they often create new money to do so, expanding the debt money supply. The interest paid on this growing government debt then becomes income, particularly for the banking sector receiving it, which then gets distributed as dividends within the broader household sector.
So government debt interest payments essentially pump extra unearned by production income into the system, benefiting primarily those who hold the debt.
That's the mechanism the model describes. And this continuous injection of income, not matched by real production, creates persistent inflationary pressure. It devalues the money over time. The paper calls it a design failure.
So this suggests inflation isn't just about, say, the Fed printing too much money or supply chain shocks.
Yeah.
There's a constant underlying inflationary pressure built into the debt money system itself. A quiet tax, almost.
That's the argument, yes. Yeah. A structural feature that constantly erodes purchasing power.
And how does this inflated income and eroding value, how does that specifically hit wage earners?
That's another crucial piece. The model proposes we need to rethink how we measure wage share. Traditionally, it's wages divided by producer income.
Okay.
But this model says, no, you need to divide wages by the total inflated income distributed to households, including those interest-driven dividend flows, to get a true picture.
A revised definition. And what happens when you use that?
What they find is quite stark. As the spread for government bond rates goes up, meaning more interest flows from government debt to bondholders, mainly banks, this revised wage share goes down.
So even if wages are rising slightly in absolute terms,
workers become relatively poorer compared to those earning non-wage income, like the bankers receiving dividends fueled by that government debt interest. Their slice of the overall inflated economic pie shrinks. It contributes to interclass inequality.
That really paints a picture. If your pay stays flat, but the total pie inflates because of these other income streams, your relative position worsens. It also makes you think about history. Can this model explain things traditional economics struggled with?
That's one of its strengths, according to the paper. It claims to qualitatively reproduce major events like the Great Depression and, more recently, Japan's lost 30 years.
Events that models based on exogenous money often couldn't fully explain, right?
Exactly. Those models often missed these internal debt-driven dynamics. For Japan's lost 30 years simulation, for instance.
Yeah.
Even when the government spent aggressively huge fiscal stimulus, production still stagnated or declined. And counterintuitively, interest rates kept falling, which contradicts the standard crowding out theory that says government borrowing should push rates up.
Huh. So the model predicted that.
It reproduced that dynamic. And it also showed, consistent with the other findings, that wage income was effectively being transferred to bankers as dividends, largely originating from the interest on that massive government debt. Figure 20 in their paper apparently illustrates this.
So these huge economic crises might not just be external shocks or policy errors, but potentially inherent behaviors of the debt money system itself, almost predictable outcomes.
That's the provocative suggestion, yes, that the system, by its very design, is prone to these kinds of long-term stagnation and wealth transfer dynamics.
It's a pretty sobering analysis. If this debt-based system has these, let's say, design flaws, does the paper suggest any way out? Any alternative?
It does touch upon an alternative, though briefly in this part of the research. It proposes what it calls a public money system.
Public money? How would that work?
The core idea is that money would be issued directly by the government, but crucially, as interest-free public equity, not as interest-bearing debt created by banks.
Interest-free.
Okay. The goal would be equitable distribution, perhaps funding public projects or even citizen dividends aiming for a stable quantity of money and stable value. It's presented as a way to completely eliminate those built-in unfair features, the zero-sum game, and the inherent inflationary pressures tied to debt creation and interest payments.
So bypassing the banks as money creators entirely?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Shifting money creation from private debt-based creation to public equity-based issuance.
Well, this deep dive has certainly thrown up some challenging ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at money being born as debt, this endogenous creation.
Uh-huh.
The fixed interest rate spreads, leading to what the model calls a zero-sum income game, constantly transferring wealth.
Right, the one-way flow.
The idea of built-in inflation tied to government debt cycles and how that erodes wage earners' relative share of the pie. All presented not as bugs, but as features of the current system.
It really is a different lens, isn't it? It suggests a paradigm shift away from models assuming exogenous money. By focusing on the debt-based nature, it allows for, arguably, a more comprehensive analysis of why economies behave the way they do, especially during crises.
It definitely forces a rethink of fundamental assumptions.
Yeah.
As we wrap up, the core question lingers. If our money system is fundamentally based on debt creation at interest, and if that does have these built-in consequences described by the model, what could an economy designed differently actually look like? How might a system without those features, maybe like the public money idea mentioned, change your financial future, the distribution of wealth, maybe even societal stability? It's certainly something profound to reflect on. We encourage you to keep exploring these ideas.